Oh yeah. Just a 1-4-5-2. Here's 5. Back to 4. Same bass line, 1-3-5-6. We got to go. The same thing happens again. I want to get to where the Celeste comes in so people can hear that and they'll know what to look for on Noble Surfer 2. I think it comes now. There's key change. And it's doubled with Carl's guitar.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's like
that.
Cool. And the, yeah, there's first combining of instruments for Brian.
All right, welcome back to the In My Beach Boys Room podcast. I am Adam Schreiner. I'm sitting here with Matthew Hart. Today we are analyzing Surfing USA, the second album, official yes, album.
That is correct, sir.
So we'll get into that. But obviously, we have to give you our social media stuff. So please, YouTube, subscribe, like, do all those things that help us grow the podcast. You can just look up Matthew Hart's music. Just put that in the search bar and you'll find the channel. And then the other one that we use mostly is Facebook. Matthew will post on Facebook more than anything else. And so Instagram as well. You can search Matthew Hart's on Facebook, or you can just look up Matthew Hart's music on Instagram, and that's pretty much it for our social media. Easy, keeping it simple. That's how we like to do it. Our preference. So there's that. Okay, so we are running through these episodes, and these albums. We're analyzing them. So this one, if you were to go back, if you're a new listener, we're analyzing these albums back in the first season of the podcast. We recorded an episode. It's entitled 1962 to 1964 with special guest Bud and Sally. Mm-hmm. And in that episode, we talk more about the history. We talk about the album as well, but we, you know, contextually bring up the history and kind of what's going on in the Beach Boys world at that time. And so in this episode, we're just going to look at the music. Matthew has
primarily, yeah. We have to interject a few little tiny things for context every once in a while.
But. Yeah. And then Matthew has his guitar handy to kind of explain and show what's going on musically, why we might feel the way we feel when we hear certain chords and that sort of thing. So I'm really enjoying these episodes. These are fun. I'm, you know, doing this critical listening and having you kind of validate my thinking it's been really enjoyable. So
yeah.
So yeah, quick little intro today. So I think with that, let's get started. So I'll let you take it from here, and then we can start getting the music when you...
Yeah, so we're talking 63, and we're talking like the very beginning of 1963. This album is a leap forward, big time, from Surf and Safari. It also, the second album, you know, the Beach Boys have had just a couple of number one albums, and it was the concert album from 64 and Endless Summer, the big compilation from 74, right? Second album went to number 2.
Wow. Yeah, that is a big jump.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 75.
From, well, no, it was 32 was
32,
the album.
The album itself.
The album itself. And this album went to number 2. Now, Surfin' USA, I think, went to number 3. And it was the other side of it was Shut Down, which we'll talk about in a little bit. You know, the musician Jackson Browne from the 70s, Doctor My Eyes, my favorite song of his is Somebody's Baby, but just an amazing guy who talks about this album, I think in Alan Boyd's documentary, and he says, this is the thing that put him on the map. He says, this is the thing that, kids were surfers all over the place, even in Arizona, you know, mm-hmm. They were putting surfboards on their cars and there wasn't an ocean to take their,
this was
before the Beatles too. And so this album literally put the Beach Boys on top of the American charts without a real rival. And they hadn't even really started touring yet. They would start touring through all of this, but it wasn't just this album that put them in that place. But before the Beatles showed up in, the beginning of the next year, the Beach Boys were on top.
Yeah. Wow.
For sure. And so by their second album, I look at the whole album, it's the same lineup as Surf and Safari, which is, I get, you know, I thought about how cool it was that maybe it was the Wilson brothers just themselves on some of that early, early stuff. But really, we're still on these albums, we're primarily the Wilson brothers. Dennis on the drums, and yes, he is on the drums. Brian on the bass. He's taught himself how to play the bass. Carl on guitar, and then just David on guitar. Mm-hmm. That's all that, you know, there's a couple of augmenting musicians on a couple tracks. People say there's another drummer on Surfing USA in addition to Dennis.
Speculation.
Yeah, there's people, there's the official word, and then there's people that disagree with the official word. And okay. In Beach Boys nerd land, you can get deep into the weeds on who's actually on here. But more, what I want the listeners to know more than anything is it's the Beach Boys.
Yeah.
Just in a couple little spots, there might be another musician. But it is so clean and tight. The tracks are super tight. I mean, they've progressed a lot since the Surf and Safari album. They've obviously been playing together a lot and rehearsing. I mean, it's super tight. The instrumentation and the playing is really amazing, and we'll get into that later. The singing sounds much more crisp and alive because this is Brian's first use of what we call double tracking, where okay. They would sing things twice, and it gave before the advent of a lot of effects, you know, this is the way that you got a shrillness and an edge to the vocals. And he stole the trick from Jan Berry and Phil Spector, mm-hmm. But this is when Brian started doing it. And Brian started doing it to such effect that he became the king of double tracking.
Okay.
You know, through the years up until Pet Sounds and, you know, beyond, you know, it became a hallmark of his vocal production style. But here we have, just right out of the gate with Surfing USA, here we have that, that dynamic. So the whole album is just performed that much better than its predecessor.
Right, right.
And we have to, it's only a few months.
Yeah.
It's not like it's 2 years that they had to
get
that much better. It's like, you know, keep these albums, like think of them as snapshots and go, ooh.
Yeah,
difference,
absolutely.
Difference.
So like a kind of a big leap as far as what they're doing, but not actually that much time for how big of a leap that they actually take him, you know, from one album to another.
Yeah. And okay. Especially in those days, and people, rock and roll was brand new. They didn't know how many months was going to in between albums, you know, everything was kind of on a field basis within the industry and within the band, you know, there's kind of, but anyway, it really shows up. And even though this album says produced by Nick Vinay, it's really Brian's producing it. Yeah. He is still running the show. He's teaching the guys their vocal parts. He's deciding what's going to go on instrumentally. You know, like Carl says, you know, Nick Vinay produced us basically by saying, take one.
Yeah.
Take two. Nick Vinay is a big part of the Beach Boys story, but as far as what his work was actually as a producer, as Brian was really doing it even on these albums, just wasn't being recognized and maybe wasn't being fully unleashed to do that job, right? Yeah. And so that kind of gives you an idea of where we're at with the whole album. You want to get into the individual tracks now?
Okay.
Well, we got to, I mean, number one. Surfing USA, folks, is in E flat. I know, you know, why they chose that, you know, Brian, for certain reasons. I mean, vocal ranges, Brian likes the timbre of a key. Brian likes the color of a key for specific songs with people. These earliest songs, that is just a weird key for an early rock and roll song to be in E flat. And anyway, but the opening riff is as a rip off of a Duane Eddy thing, but I think Carl's just doing it himself, maybe Dave and him together, but you know, I always just thought that was super thrilling when I was a little kid, not really even knowing what was going on. There's something that hit me about that, and then if everybody had a notion. Now this tune is written by Chuck Berry.
Oh, it's written by Chuck Berry.
Well, this is This is a Chuck Berry tune. This is a song, Sweet Little 16. And Brian never denied that it was Sweet Little 16. He just put new lyrics to it. With the help of his girlfriend at the time, Judy Bowles, her little brother was a surfer, and he put together a list of surfing spots. But it sometimes you'll see just Chuck Berry. Sometimes you'll see Chuck Berry, Brian Wilson. There was a Chuck Berry's publishing company owns, I think, the publishing on it. But it's that... they're really rocking in Boston, Pittsburgh, PA, deep in the heart of Texas, around the Frisco Bay, over St. Louis, all the cats want to dance with Sweet Little 16. If everybody had an ocean across the USA. It's a direct lift of the melody and the chord progression, but just turning it into a girl. It was an idea, Brian's. Oh, let's have something with all the surfing spots, kind of like they do in Sweet. So it's, and other people had done things like that in those days. So it wasn't just outright thievery, and they knew that everybody would know what it was. You know what I mean? But that's the long story short on why we've got Chuck Berry being a writer of Surfing USA. Does that make any sense? Okay. I'm a guy talking about bass lines these days, but I really think that this is a great example of just how a bass line affects this tune. And so on the verses, they use a 1-3-5-6-1. And so that's a climb all the way up there. So if everybody had a 2-3-4. Okay, now when we get to the choruses on this, Brian turns it into a blues tune. And now the bass line goes this over the same chords. Flat 7-5. So it totally changes the feel of the with the other one, you have happy. And then you go mean and edgy for the choruses. And those are things that I doubt any listener really think, but those are things that where Brian would shade things like, okay, here's the verse, now here's the chorus. It's a little dirtier.
Okay.
You know? So I wanted to point that out. Got to say something about Brian's falsetto here. This is where the first time we really ever get it in this kind of clarity and featured on a record, you know, and we've got, you know, everybody's, you know, that everybody's got surfing and then the whole Surfing USA kind of where they part out like a lead vocal and then Mike's got the regular verse and everything. So it's just notable that this is the first kind of emergence of that very effective part of their career showing up. So that's all I got on Surfing USA. You got anything?
No, I mean, honestly, my notes were just like, this is one, obviously, I've heard my whole life and no. So I was more curious about everything you just covered there on what's going on. And because there's, you know, obviously, I like the song. That first little opening guitar lick is signature, and I've always loved that. So it just, you know.
I love the guitar solo, because there's the organ solo on the record, and then Carl gets a little blast of a guitar solo after that. And the way he builds it around the pentatonic stuff. But when he did it live, they didn't have an organ solo, so he did something to approximate the organ solo, and I just love it. Then down here, I can't bend that. Yeah, but anyway, it's just, you know, he composed that solo, but it's just so cool.
Yeah.
And just like everything with the Beach Boys and me, everything's so cool.
Yeah.
But anyway. There we go on Surfing USA.
I don't think we necessarily, I mean, unless you want to play it because we just talked about it. I don't know if we really need to.
No, we don't.
Yeah. So no. we all know the song. Okay. So then we'll move to the next song, Farmer's
this
Daughter.
So after Endless Summer came out in 74 when I was 5, the next year for my 6th birthday, Capitol had started re-releasing these early albums. They didn't re-release Surf and Safari, though. They started, you know, they've already at the must have thought, ah, listen.
Yeah.
And they, so Surfin' USA, I got the mid-70s reissue of it, which was the whole album. They didn't leave anything off. So I was hearing this stuff and I remember, oh, I loved Farmer's Daughter from the very beginning. Brian's voice. I didn't, you know, the Farmer's Daughter aspect part of it. It's supposedly written about a girl that Dave was in love with out on the road, and Brian and Mike, you know, kind of that was the story from it. But one of the cool things in the music for me is the little neighboring tone trick that Brian uses here. And he starts to use it a lot on the bass and the guitar. They do it. So there's a guitar that carries that through the whole track, even while the other group. And that to me has always been like, if you try to do Farmer's Daughter without somebody doing that little move, doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
And that's a real subtle little, you know, just a neighboring tone trick.
Yeah.
But Brian's voice on here is just fantastic. And this is, Lindsey Buckingham had Fleetwood Mac cover this on a 1981 Fleetwood Mac live album. They did it at soundcheck and included it at the very end. And so Anyway, I love the tune.
Yeah. Yeah. This one, it definitely grew on me. It's not like I didn't like it, but it's for me, it was one of those songs, the more I listened to it, cause this, I was not familiar with this one. This one was one that I hadn't heard before. And so, yeah, it's like the more I listened to it, the more I liked it. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't grab me in the first listen through like some of the songs have, but it was one that's like, like when I first, and I was like, yeah, it's okay. And then I was like, oh no, this is good. I like this, you know? And the next thing I know,
especially that you're not resonating with a lot of the slower type tunes.
Exactly.
We've talked about that because why do you think that most of the hit, why do you think a lot of people haven't heard that? Nobody deemed it a hit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at the same token, I've seen these tunes do what they're supposed to do.
Right.
It's like, oh, man, and you find yourself singing it. It's just a pretty song.
Yeah.
You know, you take away the story about the farmer's daughter, which is kind of cute with this one anyway. You know what I mean? It's just when I was young, it was weird for me. This was still a surfing band, or this was kind of their debut surfing album. Not that I knew that, but here's a song about a farm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you want me
to play this one or just keep moving on?
Let's play a little bit of it and let people hear Brian's sweet vocal and those neighboring tones coming out of the gate.
You know, and I think sometimes people, that beautiful, high Brian vocal, I honestly think that some people, some people don't like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think that's kind of what the rub is for some people, is they're like, you know, where, you know, like you and I were like, ooh, that's and probably most of our listeners,
right,
when they hear that, it's, you know, gives them the chills, where other people, that's the kind of, I think you had mentioned a textural type thing that might not be, you know, why it just doesn't
work. That's what I always say. Some people don't like the Beach Boys for textural reasons. But then, just funny aside there on that, we were listening to that stereo version before, and we realized we were on the stereo version. Did you know, what did you notice about the stereo versus the mono that we just listened to?
Well, you know, it seemed, and this is just my take on it, is the stereo was more, it just seemed more full, honestly, in my headphones.
Where the mono is
kind of, I don't even know, more collapsed, I guess.
Well, that's it. Yes. So the idea on the stereo, you had all, I knew immediately.
Yeah.
Because all the vocals were over here and here's all the music over here, right? Uh-huh. And I especially hate that kind of stereo.
Yeah.
You know, because that's, but what, and we definitely don't want that in Beach Boys music, especially with the background vocals. What we want them all is exactly, because Brian decided, okay, here's the level of what I want all that to be. And I'm going to have that kind of compressed in the middle. So you can't mess, it can't be messed with.
Yeah.
And that whole, so it should have a compressed feeling to it. But I always, to me, the audio quality is not that much different.
No, it, no, you know, no.
And so when you're listening to a mono mix, like the thing that immediately was present with me is vocals went from dead left to right in the center.
You know
what I mean? And so then that whole thing is, that's the way Brian wants that stamped out to you, right in the middle of things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No. Yeah. But it definitely is a different, it definitely gives a different feel for sure when it's, you know, when going from stereo to mono. So now let's move on.
To Mr. Lou.
Mr. Lou. Is this a original?
No.
I didn't
think so. This is a cover. This is Dick Dale, a famous surf guitar player who came along, I think in the late 50s, but he was happening at the same time the Beach Boys were. He's amazing, left-handed Stratocaster playing wild man that did a lot of these tunes. As a matter of fact, they cover a couple of Dick Dale tunes on this record.
Uh-huh.
And this is the first one, but Dick Dale got it. It's an old Greek folk tune.
Interesting.
And it's modal. It follows Greek scales and it's all done on one string. You know, and so that's the technique. It's a tremolo technique that's like on a mandolin, on an Italian mandolin, which this is probably the instrument that this was done on originally. Uh-huh. But it's a hard technique to do. And I've always contended that it's both. There's some of it that's done on a bass too. I think it's Carl doing both parts because there's pictures of him on the back of Surf and Safari playing the bass. I've been playing bass on something else, but I mean, I think that he's doing all the soloing. Or I thought until just recently, I was listening to a Dave Marx album from after he left the Beach Boys in the 60s, and I've heard of this tune forever. It's called Sheriff of Nottingham, which is kind of a rip of Mr. Lou. And David's playing is just phenomenal. I'm thinking, is this, who knows, this could be David. You know, I really do think it's Carl because they learned the same things. Bottom line is, it's a hard technique, and whoever's doing it, Carl, is doing it well, especially for the level of guitar playing. I mean, he's doing it consistently. You have to do it on the bass string, and then the treble string he does it on, which is a whole different deal down there. I don't know how much time it took him to do this, and some people will probably laugh, oh, that's not hard at all. Well, I beg to differ. I think I've always been impressed by this and still am to this day. Impressed that they could pull this off.
Right, right.
So there's Mr. Lou.
Okay. All right. And then we're going to Stoked after that. And is this another
cover? Is original.
This is original.
Yes, okay. And me and my...
It did sound familiar, so I was wondering if it sounded familiar because it was a Beach Boys thing.
Well, or... you maybe have heard me cover it before because we did it in the Wilson Project band, but also my dear friend here in town, Bill Lyles, he's playing bass in the jazz band tomorrow night for the Motel Cowboy reunion. And he's a Beach Boy nut too. And one of the first gigs I played with him, he goes, let's do Stoked. And the other musicians were, we just tear into Stoked.
Yeah.
So it's a 12 bar blues, so it's not much of a write as far as the chords go, but Brian wrote the riff.
Right, right. Yeah.
Just move it to the 4. 1 5 4 1.
Yeah.
It's just a groovy little...
It's groovy.
You know,
totally.
When they were playing shows around this time, part of it was part performance and part sock hop. You know, the kids were dancing, so they were filling the shows with lots of instrumentals. You know, so kudos to Brian to getting an instrumental going.
Right.
Just be, you know, one of theirs, right?
Yeah.
Love it. It's and the Carl's soloing on it is cool, and There's a lot of Carl Wilson guitar on here, and Dave's rhythm guitar playing is great on the whole thing. So anyway, another great deal.
Yeah. Yep. So, Lonely Sea.
Yeah. So this was part of the first demo, and I think this is the version. This is the demo version because it really does sound out of context with the rest of the album. And this tune in this version was used on an early beach movie. Oh, and Brian is singing it around a campfire, dimly lit. Or I think I've seen that, but I know the tune was used in it. And so it is a straight up stretched out punk rock. And I was going through it yesterday because I remember, what key is that in? Is it, well, it's in between C and C sharp. They were not tuned standard at all when they made this thing, but it's just a punk. If we just take it like these bar chords right here, those, it's just taking the C, moving down a whole step to B flat with not even changing, and another whole step down to A flat and a half step to G, but just a major chord every time. And then what else does that sound like, people? There's Walk Don't Run by The Ventures. Now, I'm not sure if that had already come out or came after this, but again, this is not, it's just a strange progression to use in a ballad. And then they do it by Carl. He's arpeggiating.
Yeah. It's almost like a lullaby or something.
And then the melody over the top of that. It's crazy. We're already jazz. And then when we get to at the end of that, I have to go. Now we're going to take that G and make it G minor, which technically makes us into a different. And then F. And then E flat from D. A flat, then back to the G to set up going back to the C. That's why my love. It's a crazy, crazy cool tune. That's Brian and Gary Usher again. So there you go. I love it.
So should we play that one a little bit? Let's play that one because I actually kind of want to hear that now that you just did that. You can hear the difference in the quality, like you were talking about, like the demo versions, like that.
The Lonely Sea.
It's an inventive way to use that progression. One note.
It never stops.
It's one of the early gems.
For you.
Especially here in the little key change.
It moves along.
E flat.
From day.
The setup for the modulation back to C is crazy.
Today.
Here we are.
That's why my.
I guess I want to let it play up to the spoken part because I've always thought that was so cool.
You never stay.
I think it comes right after this stanza. Little bit of intonation things in the backgrounds. It's Brian, or it's Dennis and Carl and Mike. Here we go.
This pain in my heart. These tears in my eyes. Please tell the truth.
Like the swell.
You're like the
this right here is beautiful. You can really hear Dennis there. Those are hard harmonies to sing because of that progression right there. And those boys did not have any clue they were hard. Brian was just said, "You sing this,
yeah,
and you sing this,
yeah."
And then I think the end of side one is Shutdown, which was.
And I'm glad you always say that because I'm listening to these in like digital format, and so I like when you tell me that is a side one.
Right. And that was a big part of these releases. Like producers, and especially, you know, they strategize. Okay, what's going to be the opener on side two?
Absolutely.
What's going to be the openers and the closers on both sides, mm-hmm. right? It was a big part of the sequencing.
Definitely. So then side two is?
Well, this is the end of side one, I think, Shutdown. Okay. And maybe Shutdown is the first one on side. I think it's the end on side one, though. Hey, you know what, kids? Hang on.
Let's take a little look here.
Last song, side one.
Shutdown. Okay, so let's talk about Shutdown then. And to be honest with you, I know Shutdown is a pretty well-known song. Yeah. I actually didn't really know it that well at all.
Really? Okay, so it was the B-side of Surfing USA. You remember back to that 62, 64 episode when Bud was talking about, well, there was something about a car race on one side and the surfing. And I thought he was talking about the Surfing Safari 409 thing because he said Shutdown was on the other side. And then in retrospect, he was talking about the Surfing USA Shutdown single is what Bud was talking about is what the first record he heard. So anyway, this is co-written, and I think this is the first emergence of the DJ, Roger Christian, who was a real car nut and knew a lot of car lingo and stuff. And he and Brian would get together famously after this guy's shift, and they'd go to an all-night diner and eat ice cream sundaes, and he'd give them lyrics to tunes. And this is the only case where Brian really wrote music to lyrics. Like, Roger Christian would give him a poem, and Brian would go home and compose music to it.
Right.
Little Deuce Coupe later on is Roger. Don't Worry Baby is Roger. There's a lot of great Brian Wilson, Roger Christian tunes.
Okay.
So this is it. And it's a great guitar solo, just great performance in one of their early classics.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think it fits that surfer tune vibe.
Well, it's feel. The first, yeah, about, you know? This the cartoons.
Yeah.
You know, like this is. 409 and that Shutdown are among the very first car tunes.
It's just, you know, it just fits with
the
with
it. Well, it's the same type. It's just now we're putting car lyrics instead of surf lyrics.
Yeah.
So totally, they feel totally. It feels just like Surfing USA. Exactly. Yeah. Nice observation there.
So then side we get two. To side two.
Yeah.
Noble Surfer. So I kind of had the same feelings on this one as I'd never heard it before,
mm-hmm.
and it just had that cool surfer music feel to it.
I remember even a little kid there, I knew there was something, whoa, this is different sounding. I don't know if I ever really liked it that much. The unique thing about it musically is they're singing harmonies as the lead vocals. They're already into their harmonies. It's not a lead vocal, just one voice. It's all of them singing the verse. So that's kind of – and then the cool thing that I didn't know until I was older and reading the books is there's the double entendre of the lyric in the – they meant noble, like he's a noble surfer. He does things the right way, the way a surfer should, but no bullshit too. Noble.
Nice.
He's the number one man. Nice. Noble. Noble and then no bull.
Okay, and I'm sorry. And is this something that people just speculate, or this is intentional?
Yep, this is the intention. And I mean, it's pretty obvious
once you see it for sure.
Yeah,
and then I have this written down, and maybe this is in the breakdown. There's some extra instruments going on.
Yes, and this is okay. So on a couple tunes, Brian. I believe, and I think I've seen that, he's playing a mallet instrument called a celeste. Celeste. And so it's a little bell instrument. And Brian,
yeah, and so I think I thought it was like a xylophone or something.
Yeah, and that's it's just a different timbre timbred and textured xylophone with a bell-like sound.
But I think why it stuck out to me is because up until this point, we hadn't really heard any extra instruments.
No, you're right.
Okay. So excellent. That was one.
Yeah, and I remember it sticking out to me as a kid, too, like wondering, what is that magical sound?
Yeah, it's because it's just different.
Nice job, bud.
So then Honky Tonk.
Honky Tonk, this is a cover.
Yeah.
This is a cover that I think is the late 50s, maybe 1956. This guy's name was Bill Doggett. I'm not sure who the group was that did it, but it was a well-known tune that, like, kids learning electric guitar of the day, they're going to learn this tune.
So
it's kind of just... It's like it's got some certain techniques in there.
Yeah, and it's called Honky Tonk. I mean, that pretty much sums it up right there. Mm-hmm. That's exactly...
It's kind of like it really is a two-step shuffle type thing going on. But yeah.
Is there anything, is there anything specific, like Beach Boys signature thing that...
No, other than just it's yet another style, you know, a little sub-style of what they're doing that the boys are doing pretty dang good with, especially Carl.
Right.
I mean, just, you know, there's some techniques here on the guitar that are different from the other things he's doing in the album. And he does them well. The best thing he does is phrase them well.
Okay.
You know, and that's usually the most mature part of the step, you know. Right. You can get all being able to fit it all in and make it sound musical. That's the deal.
Yeah.
So that's that.
Okay, Lana?
Yeah. And so that's this is me and John loved this when we were kids. There's another, the Celeste shows up again.
Mm-hmm.
That instrument. And then Brian has a little sliding neighboring tone piano lick that's kind of the it's kind of a blues move, but it's definitely the signature of this tune, you know. It's right. A slide,
this is an original
Brian Wilson tune.
Should we listen to that real quick?
Yeah, listen to it.
Because I'm curious, because I don't remember that part.
Yeah, and the Celeste in the middle is really cool. There's a key change when it happens. We should listen to some of this.
Oh, yeah.
Just a 1-4-5 tune. Here's 5. Back to 4. Same bass line, 1-3-5-6. We got to go through. The same thing happens again. I want to get to where the Celeste comes in so people can hear that and they'll know what to look for on Noble Surfer 2. I think it comes now. There's a key change. And it's doubled with Carl's guitar. There's first combining of instruments for Brian. So it's that. Yeah, let's cut it there. That's really no. I forgot. Yeah. So Brian on the Celeste is playing the exact thing that Carl's playing on the lead guitar right there. And the idea is to take those two instruments together. This is before synthesizers, and it's just a new texture. And it sounds, it's like the listener, unless they're musically educated, it's not going to know anything about that other than how it feels or sounds, which is pretty magical, you know?
Yeah. So, and real quick, and is there any way you can describe, like, when you're saying, like, 1-4-5, like, is there an easy way for us?
Well, that's just
musically,
okay. So if we're talking about the Western system of music, I'm using those numbers. They represent the notes of the major scale. And the chords that represent those notes. So when I'm saying the one, I'm talking about the one chord, and there's, you know, it's, that's probably all the further I want to go in the weeds.
Otherwise we're getting like music theory, which.
will hear the term 1-4-5 a lot, because 1-4-5 is, you know, there's a lot of basic progressions. That's kind of the three main chords in every key, right? Okay. That every used to be every guy that played guitar down the street, if you called him a three chord guitar guy, he knew basically the three main chords in every key.
Got it. Okay. That helps. So back to the music. Surf Jam. Surf Jam. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is just a jam. I mean,
it's theirs. I think Carl gets a writing credit on it. Maybe even Dennis. I don't know. But my note says, I've got a star by this one because I've got the Wild Wilsons plus David. And it is, and you can hear Brian and Dennis yelling on this when you're listening. And Dennis is just pounding the hell out of the drums and spots, you know, and they're
rocking.
Going for it. Yeah. You know, it's just, of the instrumentals and this on the whole album, this is my favorite because that exuberance is coming out and just
kind of an unleash.
Yeah. It's just their wild, I don't know. I really, really, really like it.
Yeah.
Let's Go Trippin'. Let's just move right to that. Yeah. That's the other Dick Dale cover on here. And they played this live. It's on the concert album. Mm-hmm. They did it live for years and it was, kind of a crowd participate. Mm-hmm. They would get involved in it or something like, but it's got some other techniques on it that are notable as far as Carl playing lead guitar stuff. I mean, this was one of Dick Dale's signature numbers. So the fact that the Beach Boys covered his one of his big hits, and this one was certainly one of them, is I'm going to say ballsy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he did them so well.
Yeah. You know?
But they did a good job. Dang good job. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then we've got the album run here. And this was a favorite of Brian's. He played a snippet of this in the 1995 documentary, I Just Wasn't Made for These Times, sitting at a piano. And I thought, whoa, he played a little bit of Finders Keepers, but the hook in the chorus and there's a key change thing that's going on there too. The Finders Keepers, Losers Weepers, and they go back to that. Something about that when I was a kid really did something to me. Really musically just.
I wonder if we're talking about the same spot. And so, you know how I've done this in previous episodes and in conversations we've had where I'll ask you if something sounds like something, say, hey, this kind of reminds me of this. It's musically, is it similar? So, and I think if it's the same part I'm talking about, it kind of reminded me of, it's like Finders Keepers, where it was similar to, Fun, da, 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 da.
Yeah, sure. That might have been the beginning of fun. Sure.
Okay. Just like, I don't know if that, like.
I sure see. I hear it now that you say that. I never did before, but yeah.
Am I talking about the same part that you were just talking about that mm-hmm. you said, okay, it is that. Maybe we'll play it.
Well, it is because it's just a fun, tiller. It's the same note.
Uh-huh.
Finders Keepers, but then it deviates.
Then it deviates, yeah. But just that one part. Yeah, just that one part.
And that might be coincidence, but maybe it is the beginnings of Fun.
Okay, because obviously Fun came out after this.
A couple years after this, or a year.
Okay, so, I mean, that wraps up the music on Surfing USA. Is there anything else
you know? Murray was involved with this one quite a bit, and he's involved with everything we're going to talk about the next two or three albums, even after this.
Okay.
And so I want to, you know, Murray Wilson is there and helping. And, you know, I want to remind people that Murray is a story that's a kind of a two-sided story. You know, and without Murray, we wouldn't have had they never would have got this recording contract.
Right.
And his help in the beginning and pushing them in the beginning to be better than they, you know, to just get the best out of them
mm-hmm.
in those studio sessions and probably here too, you know, or I'm almost sure here, it's a big part of this record.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but other than that, we're done.
We're done with it. And so next episode, we're getting into Surfer Girl.
The Surfer Girl.
Ended up kind of hitting me in a way that I wasn't expecting.
A lot of people.
We'll get into that. But I don't think I really understood why people loved it so much until I actually took the time to sit down and really listen to it. Mm-hmm. But we'll get into that in the next episode. Thank you again for listening, and we will see you next time.